Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit You, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit You on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags NonprofitU, Dear Rehabilitation Services, or Eradicate Domestic Violence. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_you. You'll find a Nonprofit You fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account. You'll find a link to open the account on the episode page, and you can also email me questions at consulting@valeriefleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find the Nonprofit You fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark, and the call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. Today's episode is Eliminating Domestic Violence. We'll talk about domestic violence, how to identify people who have been abused, ways we may help them, and available resources. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions and to participate in live chats at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals, educators, and community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your stories. Our guest for today is Dr. Dennis Deer. He's the president of Deer Rehabilitation Services, a full-service mental health practice addressing issues of behavioral health, substance abuse, and domestic violence. Dennis has over 17 years of experience serving disenfranchised and disadvantaged populations. Dennis is a certified rehabilitation counselor, certified partner abuse intervention professional, licensed clinical professional counselor, clinically certified forensic counselor, and a certified corrective thinking therapist. He has led staff and corporate trainings in various settings around the country, including schools, jails, and law enforcement agencies. In addition, Dennis works diligently with Congressman Danny Davis as the chairman of the 7th Congressional District Ex-Offender Task Force. He's also with Commissioner Robert Steele as the chair of the 2nd County District Community Advisory Council, and he works with others to impact change in public policy. In addition, Dennis serves on the board of the North Lawndale Employment Network, Strategic Human Services, and the Cook County Sheriff's Reentry Council. He's also a co-founder of the North Lawndale Community Coordinating Council, and he is an Illinois Law Enforcement Standards and Training Board certified instructor, as well as a Cognitive Restructuring National Trainer. He's written several books and articles, including his most recent dynamic book, Unwrapping the Box and Dominating Practical Principles to Eliminating Box Thinking. In addition, Dennis is also a licensed general contractor and is owner of Miracle Construction and Management Company and JDS Developers, Real Estate Development Holding Company. So you can find the bio for Dennis on my blog, Nonprofit You, under episode 25, Eliminating Domestic Violence. Go to valerieflennard.com/nonprofitU and click onto the episodes page. So, Dennis, you're highly qualified, and I thank you for being on the show. It's indeed an honor to have you. Can you tell us a little bit about Deer Rehabilitation Services and how you came to start your company?
So, first and foremost, thank you, Valerie, for having me on today to talk about the issue of domestic violence. Often we hear about this issue from the victim services standpoint and not the perpetrator standpoint. So, and all of them are similar but in particular, I'm thankful for the perpetrator standpoint. To give a little bit about Deer Rehabilitation Services, it is a company that I founded some 15 years ago in a move to really deal with some of the gaps in the community where I was residing. And I am from North Lawndale, born and raised. I still live in North Lawndale. And my company's main office is in North Lawndale. And I saw that in our community, there was a significant amount of violence occurring, and specifically domestic violence. It's one of those issues that no one really wants to talk about. And so I knew that I had received some training in domestic violence, and I'm a psychologist, by the way, by training. And I received some training in domestic violence and working with perpetrators. And I was doing that work at a place called Sarah's Inn in Oak Park. And I thought, you know, hey, this is something that's really needed in my community, which, you know, then the idea popped into my mind about Deer Rehabilitation Services. And so we were started out of need to fill service gaps that were not there as it relates to psychology and working with individuals, mostly who were offenders, but obviously we worked with everyone.
Oh, awesome. And we realize that this show is for nonprofit professionals and that you run a nonprofit business. However, the issue of domestic violence impacts us all wherever we work or live. And there are a number of nonprofit organizations and government agencies that are set up to address issues related to domestic violence. In fact, domestic violence takes on many forms, and this includes child abuse, spousal abuse, domestic partner abuse, and elder abuse. Can you give us a sense for the magnitude of the issue just in Cook County and some of the impacts that you're seeing?
So let me address something before I answer that, Valerie, and I was just at another meeting and I addressed it there. My company is a for-profit company, but we are what you would call a socialpreneur. Our company is a social enterprise for all practical purposes, and we do a lot of work that nonprofits do. We just happen to be for-profit, and let me explain why we're for-profit. We are for-profit because I live in North Lawndale. I was born and raised there. And I wanted to contribute to the economic tax base in our community. There's a place for nonprofits, and I, you know, respect nonprofits, but nonprofits do not contribute to the tax base, which meaning that they don't pay taxes. A for-profit does. So I'm willing to pay those taxes if it's going to go to helping to redevelop my community. And that's one of the main core reasons why I started a for-profit. So now I'll answer that, the other question that you had. How profound is domestic violence? Domestic violence is so profound that every 9 seconds in the United States, a woman is assaulted or beaten. Around the world, 1 in 3 women are attacked as it relates to domestic violence. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than car accidents, mugging, and rapes combined. Studies actually suggest, Valerie, that up to 10 million children witness some form of domestic violence annually. So this thing is actually not only having an impact on the two individuals involved in domestic violence, but it's actually impacting the family core as a whole. Some additional statistics that I would give is nearly 1 in 5 teenage girls who have been in a relationship said a boyfriend threatened violence or self-harm if they were presented with a breakup. Okay? 92% of women surveyed listed reducing domestic violence and sexual assault was one of their top concerns. So as you can see, just by those statistics alone, domestic violence is very, very huge. But I would also add that it's very huge in the African-American community as well. This is one of those taboo topics that oftentimes we don't want to talk about in our community, but it's something that's at the top of the agenda for issues that need to be dealt with.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh my goodness! Be careful what you ask for. You just might get an answer.
Right. That was just a few off the top of my head.
Right, right. And I'm only laughing not at the situation or the gravity of the situation, but boy, it's worse than what I imagined. So I got to laugh to keep from crying. So I'm not trying to be insensitive.
It is a huge issue. Certainly not one that's a laughing matter, because you have many women who are going through this on a daily basis. And oftentimes, you know what the number one question is, Valerie? Why do they stay?
Oof.
Why do you stay in a domestic violence relationship? Is always the number one question that we hear.
And do you have a number of answers? Is it the same answer, or does it vary?
Well, the number one reason that women stay is for their children.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes they are told, you know, if you leave me, you will never see your children again. And oftentimes abusers will put a woman in a economically abusive situation. So they make them pay them their money from their paycheck if they're working, give them an allowance. So it's hard for them to save up money and to try to leave in a scenario that's safe for them. And oftentimes they know that if they leave, that abuser will probably try to find them and make do on what he promised. Because some of them say, you know, if I can't have you, nobody can.
Right. We read a lot about that in the news.
Absolutely. And I would venture to say, Valerie, that, you know, there are a couple reasons why I'm in the field. But one of the main reasons one of the first occurrences of domestic violence in my life, I must have been about 12 years old. And there was a young lady, never forget, she was a family friend. And, you know, she had went to school, 26 years old, finished, got her nursing degree, working as a nurse. But she had been in a previous relationship with this gentleman that, you know, she was in a domestic violence relationship. She ended up calling the police. He got time in jail. But at that particular time, he was released and nobody notified her. So she was actually on her way to work, getting ready to leave out of the house to take her son to childcare, and he jumps out from under the and Oof. Unfortunately he murders her right in front of their children, right in front of her son. And the thing that, you know, her sister remembered the most, because she was at the door because she heard all the scuffing, was that the son said, "My daddy killed my mother."
Oh my goodness.
And that was the first incident painful. Of domestic violence that I had ever heard of before.
Wow. So in your practice, what have you observed have been some of the greatest triggers for domestic abuse, and what are some of the strategies that you use with your clients to offset the triggers?
So again, I sit on, this probably wasn't on my very long resume that you have, my bio, but I'm actually vice president of the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence. I sit on the statewide board. I just became vice president. I was the corporate secretary. But I would venture to say that, you know, some of the strategies that we utilize for working with individuals and particularly perpetrators of domestic violence is, first and foremost, they have to stop believing that denial is a river in Egypt, and get that denial river, right? But we're really talking about denial, right?
They do not think that they
have responsibility in being a perpetrator of domestic violence. And I would also add this, that, you know, the goal, as it is on the victim services side of the continuum, is to keep women and children safe. And so we work with those individuals who are actually perpetrators or putting their hands on the women, right? And we teach them skills for nonviolent living. So we use a therapeutic approach, cognitive behavioral therapy, psychoeducation, to help them to learn tools that they need to eliminate or reduce or stop them from making a choice to be violent. So an example of that will be we teach them cues, right, and triggers to their violence. So, for instance, you know, all of us, before we snap or, you know, get ready to beat somebody up, we go through a phenomenon that's called fight or flight. And what that means
right.
is that's our autonomic nervous system saying to us, look, you're in trouble, you need to run, or you need to stand there and fight. We teach them to use that to their advantage, actually. So, essentially, mm-hmm. when they feel their physical cues, which is could be sweaty palms, could be that they're sweating, could be they're turning red, or have their spilling, get butterflies in their stomach, that's your cue that you need to leave that particular situation, because if you don't, you're going to become violent, right? We also teach them the different types of abuse, right? So there are actually four types of abuse. There is physical, there's verbal abuse first. There's physical abuse. There's what we got verbal, we got physical, we got psychological and sexual. So actually I mixed them up. Verbal, psychological, sexual, and physical abuse. Those are your four types of abuse, right? And so oftentimes, a lot of individuals will, you know, be verbally abusive, but they don't think that's abuse. Hey, I didn't put my hands on her. But you were still verbally / psychologically abusive to her, calling her name, so forth and so on. That's a form of psychological abuse, as well as verbal abuse. It's not, they don't become arrested until they do something like sexual rape or physical abuse, when they actually put their hands. So we teach them those types of abuse and how to identify their triggers, their physical cues. There's also something Valerie calls a red flag word. And a red flag word, a red flag word or phrase is any word or phrase that can be said to you that takes you from 2.2 seconds. Right.
Wow.
And so my red flag word when I was growing up, when I started doing this work and going to school with other psychologists, you know, I learned my red flag word, you know, and I learned how to deal with that because I didn't like people talking about my mama. So when a person can identify their red flag word and become aware of it, they know more of how to deal with that. So those are just a couple of the triggers and cues that individuals who are perpetrators of domestic violence deal with.
That's really interesting. So you have a model. It's a clinically proven model that helps people modify their behavior. So do you at some point sign off and let people be reunified? You know, reunited.
Reunited, unified, right. So that's an excellent question, Valerie. So here's my response. We never say that anybody is cured. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We teach them the tools that they need to succeed. We don't, we actually, in our program, we are a state protocol approved program, which means we're licensed to do this work. And I actually help write the protocol, right? So I sit on the committee that does that. And so, in essence, we don't give them a certificate of completion, and the reason why is that they will never be complete with the journey to stay nonviolent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of us have tendencies of violence, right? We just choose not to act on it. So just like you and I, we don't have certificates saying we're cured, but if someone slaps us, guess what we're going to do? Probably slap them back unless we got some sense and say, hey, I got too much to lose, so I'm not going to slap them.
Right.
So we don't give certificates of completion. We think that that's a lifelong process. We do give individuals letters saying that they have successfully completed phase one and phase two of our program, but completion of becoming nonviolence free is a lifetime experience.
Okay. Well, thanks for clearing that up.
Yep, no problem.
Okay, and you know most of us listening to the podcast, we're not trained psychologists, we're not medical professionals. So what are some of the signs of domestic violence that we might observe from our friends, neighbors, and colleagues at work to know that they might be either a perpetrator or they might be experiencing, you know, domestic violence. And for me, I'm probably more concerned with folks who are experiencing, but I know that, you know, we need to look at the whole continuum, the people who are perpetrators as well as those who are on the receiving end.
Right. So can you restate the question?
Okay. We lay people, we don't always know the signs of domestic violence.
I see. I got you.
So what are some of the signs that we should look out for, you know, in the workplace, you know, in our neighborhoods, you know, people who have been abused, people who might be potentially abusive?
Okay. Very, very good. That's an excellent question. There are many signs that you can look out for. So from a workplace perspective, you know, you want to watch out for people who come to work and, you know, periodically they may have bruises on their arms or, you know, a black eye, and they'll give you some kind of excuse that, oh, I fell when I was painting, or, you know, I bruised easy, I bumped up against a wall or something like that. You know, nine times out of ten, they may be in a domestic violence relationship. Another key sign in the workplace is a person that is always fidgety when it's time to go home, right? So because that abuser has more than likely given them a timetable to get home. And if they are home within that timetable, they're going to get it, right? So, you know, in some cases, you know, technology works against people who are victims of domestic violence, and that some abusers have GPS installed on the victim's car so they can always see where that car is and where it's going. And if it deviates from that route, there are going to be questions about it, and that's going to be a problem. So, you know, that is those are some of the signs and symptoms at the workplace. In the school for teenagers, we did, you know, some years ago, a safe dates program inside of, you know, the high schools and elementary schools. You know, any teenager that, or, you know, young adult for that matter, who's in a relationship and, you know, being dictated to all the time, being told, you know, you aren't cool if you don't do X, Y, Z, you're going to be square, so forth and so on. So that could be signs and symptoms of domestic violence, calling her name, using psychological abuse to, you know, attempt to play mind games with her. If you don't do this, there are other fish in the sea. You know, I can have this girl and that girl, using verbal abuse. So those could be some of the signs and symptoms inside of the school place. At home, I would add that, you know, if you have a friend, again, that's always got bruises and bumps, and, you know, you notice that she stopped talking to you, or, you know, has been isolated, because what the abuser would do is to try to isolate them away from their family and friends so that they can make them think that they're crazy. You know, that could be a sign and symptom of abuse. And then there are numerous others, but I just kind of pick and chose the ones that I just gave. Any interest?
Okay. Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah, it's interesting. I can remember in high school, you know, I had a friend that I was really close to, and she met a guy, and he put a wedge as friends. And, you know, we were closer than sisters. But after that relationship got started, you know, he put a wedge in it and then he also put a wedge between her and her parents. You know, she had very close relationships with her parents. So he basically, you know, like you said, isolated her from her support system, and then she was out there alone. She even moved out of her house. You know, she was one of those people who got any and everything that her little heart desired, right? And she moved over to his house, and she was treated like Cinderella by the family and was abused
Check
by
it
him. It was just a horrible situation. Thank God she eventually got out of it, but, you know, she wasted several years of her life in that situation.
And I can imagine that. And that's typically what happens. You know, I'm glad that she was able to get out, because there are so many people who tend not to be able to. And what's interesting, Valerie, is that you know, the largest issue with, there are plenty of shelters out there for women who are in situations of domestic violence. There are victim service agencies. A couple of them are Sarah's Inn and Oak Park, for any of the listeners who may want to know about victim service agencies. There's Sarah's Inn and Oak Park. There is the Chicago Metropolitan Battered Women's Network. There's okay. Connection for Abused Women Coalition. And so those are just a few victim service organizations who actually provide services for the victims, and we're actually connected with those outfits who provide services for victims, because they typically will send us people who are perpetrators of domestic violence. But I would add one more tidbit, Valerie, and that is, 98% of the people that we see in any of our groups for perpetrators of domestic violence happen to be mandated by the courts. The other 2% are voluntary.
Okay, so do you think it's hard for people to admit that they have a problem? You think that might
Absolutely.
Be the issue? Okay.
Absolutely. People, it's hard for them to admit that they have a problem, you know. Some people think denial is a river in Egypt. They don't want it. And then, Valerie, in our community, in the African-American community to be exact, we have a taboo with counseling or any type of psychotherapy or psychological services. You know, we believe that if we go to seek out those types of services, even if it's group counseling for domestic violence, we think somebody's going to think that we're crazy. So we won't do it voluntary, but I would say this, in the 17 years that I've been doing this work, every single male who comes through our program, by the time it's 26 weeks that the state mandates, 26 sessions that the state mandates, by the time they get to the 10th session, they said, man, I wish I would have found out about this program, you know, 5-10 years ago. You know, I wish I could have came volunteering. And we always say, but you know what? In the mindset you were in 5 or 10 years ago, you probably would have said, oh, man, I ain't going to that junk. If somebody make me go, I'll go, but I'm not going. Right?
That's true. I mean, I think, it's hard enough to get men to go to a doctor for annual visit, right, let alone to a psychologist, you know, and
that's
there's
right.
a stigma around that.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. So, you
okay.
know, it's been an uphill climb, but things are getting better.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's good. So for lay people, you already did a good job of helping us to identify what the symptoms are for the victims as well as the abusers. But what do we do? You know, we're so reluctant to, you know, just get in the middle of stuff. I mean, you could literally be killed these days, or you might be accused of being an interloper or being too nosy. So what strategies would you recommend for people who wanted to help victims get out of their situation?
So the first and foremost thing that a person should do is first let that victim know that you care. And that you aren't really trying to get into their business, but offer them, you know, some help. You know, hey, I know this place called Sarah's Inn, or I know this place called Chicago Metropolitan Women's Battered Network. You know, I'll go with you. Let's just go and see, you know, what can be done. Let's leave work early, take off. And I'll tell the boss, you know, I'll give you some of my time so you aren't using your time. And we'll drive my car. And let's go and try to, you know, see if we can get you some help, because it's those organizations that teach women how to develop a safety plan and how to start stashing stuff aside and kind of planning, you know, when they're going to leave and how they're going to leave, et cetera. Gives them legal recourse and things of that nature. But more than anything, I would say the number one thing is to be a friend. You know, don't try to tell or manipulate the person into doing what they want to do, or don't get upset at them because they won't leave. They have to leave in their own time. They need you to be supportive of them and not walk away from them in the time that they really need you.
Oh, that's excellent advice. So what are some of the characteristics of some of the most successful programs you have seen? You know, I know that you're a for-profit business, but you typically work with, you know, many organizations that are also nonprofit, and you're on several nonprofit board, so you're pretty familiar with what doesn't work, not to mention that you're a professional in this area. So what are some of the typical characteristics of models that work in this industry for domestic violence?
So models that work on the women's side are models that I just made mention that provide women with shelter services, legal representation, a way out, counseling services, as well as provide the children with counseling services, because remember, they've witnessed all of this, right?
Right.
On the perpetrator side, the model program, you know, has to be protocol approved, provide that between 24 and 26 sessions, at minimum 1.5 hours of group therapy for that individual, and some organizations go up to 2 hours, providing that service, but also not trying to do or allowing marriage counseling to take place until that person has completely finished services as a perpetrator of domestic violence. And I say that because if we allow marriage counseling to take place before that person has completed, that perpetrator has completed the services for perpetrators of domestic violence, he's just going to utilize that to blame the woman, and she won't be able to talk. And, you know, if she says anything that he doesn't want her to say, he's going to get her later on.
Right.
And so
right.
We don't advocate for that. Neither does the protocol of the state of Illinois. So those are just some examples of best practices. And typically, those best practices have come from the MEN Network out of Minnesota, the Duluth model out of Minnesota. Minnesota happens to be the hotbed of starting some of the groups for perpetrators of domestic violence.
That's good to know. So the final question before we open it up to callers, what are some of the lessons you've learned in your years of providing mental health services?
I have learned never judge a book by its cover, right? I first started doing providing services for perpetrators of domestic violence inside of the Champaign County Jail. And, you know, I came up against some of the largest, meanest-looking people that you probably ever seen, but after I started working with them, I found out they were just like me and you. So I've learned that, you know, never judge a book by its cover. Another thing that I've learned is each person is different. And so we have to learn as individuals and in practice, profession, or outside of profession to meet people where they are, you know, because we never know when a person's last straw is.
Right.
So that's just a couple of things that I've learned in my years of experience.
Excellent, excellent. So we're going to open it up for callers now. If you're listening and you have questions, feel free to give us a call. That number is 347-884-8121. Again, the number is 347-884-8121. Feel free to call in with questions. Okay, and then, Dennis, we'll wait just a little bit to see if we get any callers. So far, there's no one who is calling, and I'm enjoying this conversation. I've learned so much that there's so much to know about.
Amazing. Yeah, it is an amazing, you know, topic to be discussing. And if I can give individuals my website, they can go and I actually have a couple YouTube videos that I've done where I go in depth into, you know, how identifying domestic violence and why we do the work that we do. And our website address is www.deerrehabservices.com. Now, Deer Rehab Services is DeerrehabHAB as in Bob, services, SERVICES. .com. So if you go there, you know, you can go to, you know, I believe it's under domestic violence or under our groups. And then there's a YouTube video that kind of, you know, has part one and part two. And really, I really talk about in depth about 10 minutes for each video, you know, what we do in the area of domestic violence and why we do it.
Oh, okay, great. So it doesn't look like we have any callers at this point, and we've come to the end of our show. I'd like to thank Dr. Dennis Deer, president of Deer Rehabilitation Services, for being our guest. You just gave us your website. Are there any more comments that you might have, you know, before we close out? And also, if you can let folks know how they can reach you.
I was just going to say, my last comment would be, you know, if you have any questions as it relates to domestic violence, how a person can take advantage of our services, or any place else that we may need to refer them to, you can reach us at area code 773-826-0398. Again, that's 773-826-0398. You can either ask for myself, Dr. Dennis Deer, or Dr. Thomas, or you can talk to my assistant, Tiffany, and she will direct you to either myself or the person that you need to talk to.
Okay, and you are based in North Lawndale, and you are contributing mightily to the economic base and helping to redevelop the community. And thank you so much for that.
Absolutely, and thank you. Thanks for having me today.
Sure. So I want to thank our listening audience for listening to Nonprofit U Blog Radio Talk Show today. This show will be available for download within about an hour. Be sure to tune in next week when I'm going to talk about the things that keep people from moving forward in their quest to get a tax exemption for their organization. So until then, take care of the nonprofit and you. All right, Dr. Deer?
All right, bye-bye.
I will talk to you later. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.